Chairman, members of the commission, staff, for the record, Ring Lardner, principal and professional engineer with the firm Davis Bone and Friedel, One Park Avenue, Milford, Delaware, 19963. I'd like to begin with the transportation portion of the project. It was fitting the doubt I started first, so I may repeat a slight bit of what they went over, but I think it'll further help address Mr. Mears' original comments, and that this is different and unique. Am I not close enough?
Yeah, I was going to ask you, try to stay close to the mic, and commissioners, I'm going to ask you to do the same thing. If everybody pulled their mics forward, and maybe at some point we'll find a book or something to put under that thing so that it lifts it up a little bit higher for you.
I think we use Mr. Hunt's voluminous materials here to get us there. Is that better, Mr. Wheely?
That is too funny. Yeah. That is just too funny. Just for those of you who enjoy numbers, those binders there, 2,132 pages. Yeah.
Fair amount of work, Mr. Wheely.
It was. It was hard to stay awake.
We'll try to keep you awake the rest of the afternoon.
Thank you. Yeah.
As we mentioned, the project has two road frontages. Our first road frontage is east and west, is the Lewis Georgetown Highway, otherwise known as U.S. Route 9. As mentioned, the Department of Transportation classifies this road as other principal arterial. This road is further listed as one of seven roads defined in Chapter 99 of the Sussex County Code as a major arterial roadway. Second road frontage that exists kind of in a southwest general direction, keep it somewhat cardinal directions, is Beaver Dam Road, otherwise known as State Route 23. That road, according to the Delaware Department of Transportation, is classified as a major collector per their functional classification maps. As you are well aware of by now, this project is located with the Henlopen Transportation Improvement District, which is outlined in orange. I want to thank Pam for doing a great job explaining the TID. You've saved me some time this afternoon of explaining that. And that's what makes this project unique, in that typically a project this size would have been required to do studies analyzing dozens of intersections and roadways and analysis, including roads that are queued for signals. All that has been done by DLDOT and their consultant JMT. And with those results, we'll go over in a few minutes of some slides. This slide comes from the original TID that was reviewed and agreed upon between DLDOT and Sussex County Council. The numbers haven't changed. I want to kind of give you background. So these are from the original slides for its background. The area in purple is North Star. That project, per the TID, was assigned trips for 771 single-family residential units and 96,188 square feet of commercial. In consultation with DLDOT, and as noted by Ms. Sarah Coakley, in her letter dated April 18, 2024, and that letter is included in your booklet, this project, as proposed, is within the threshold of the assigned and planned trip for this property. The project will be required to enter into a recoupment agreement with DLDOT, and the agreement shall be recorded with Sussex County Recorder of Deeds prior to final plan approval. There are several projects within the TID, as Pam had mentioned, and I will not go through all of those. I will refer to three that are located along our frontage or within our property limits. The first project, and again, these maps have not been updated, so some of the improvements may have been extended. The first calls for widening of Lewis Georgetown Highway, US Route 9. What that widening consists of, as you have heard, is in the preliminary stages and is going through that, we'll be going through that process, part of the Route 9 corridor study. Second project that's been identified is Beaver Dam Road, again, along our frontage. That road is also called to be widened as part of the traffic improvement district, and will be done before 2045, as that entire TID is based on the final projected growth. The one thing I do want to slightly correct for the record is the Mulberry Knoll Road extended that goes through our project. That improvement is identified in the TID That improvement is not required to be completed by the developer. That developer has proffered to build that road as part of this project, recognizing the need for the extension on Bourbonno Road and the desire of this developer by building that upfront in kind in lieu of paying cash will help push along DLDOT to finish the other parts of the road that's been identified. And the developer wants to do this road as part of the recognized need for making this connector to improve the area. So I just want to clarify that for the record.
Thank you.
But you are correct. The distance is about one-third of Bourbonno Road. In discussing Bourbonno Road, there was a study completed by DLDOT. That study could be found on their website. I've taken a couple of excerpts of that study for this afternoon's presentation. The first excerpt is the proposed cross-section of what they had proposed as part of the project.
My apologies to interrupt. We actually, you have two binders. If you could lose one of the binders and just drop it down.
Absolutely.
It's actually too close.
Now I'm being too loud.
It's generating some feedback on me.
Who would have thought that?
Thank you.
Is that better? Testing, 1, 2, 3, good in the background? Okay. Continuing on. Bourbonno Road Extended, again, was a study completed by DLDOT. The full study can be found on their website in the publications section of the project of their website. As currently proposed, it is for 2 11-foot travel lanes, 8-foot shoulders, shared use path on both sides of the road, and then an open drainage ditch. As part of this project, we will work with DLDOT on what the appropriate cross-section will include, as I suspect there will probably be some turn lanes required to accommodate the access for this project, and that will be done as part of the approval process with DLDOT. The next two excerpts are the concept alternatives that DLDOT has proposed. There are actually three alternatives. One we've been told DLDOT has already thrown out, so I'm using the two alternatives that we know are being reviewed. That will extend, obviously, to give everyone an idea, that is Route 9 through here, and that is Cedar Grove Road. And here, we're currently Bourbonno Road stops at that T intersection. The change in alignment is very minimal. We're working it out. You can, if I flip fast enough back and forth, you can see the alignment through here changes. Again, that final alignment we worked out with DLDOT, but we believe this is the alignment that works best for everybody with curvature, site distance, and the like. But again, those details will be worked out as part of the final plan approval. There we go. Next, I'd like to review a few maps found in Exhibit C. The first map on your screen is the floodplain map. The project, given its size and its location, happens to actually border two different floodplain maps. We show this on two different maps. The map on the screen was last updated in 2005, and you'll see that a small portion of the site in the southwestern corner, again, using just cardinal direction, is located with the 100-year floodplain and Zone A. And then using the other map that was updated in 2015, you will notice that there are no floodplains located on that portion of the parcel. The map on the screen now is the environmental map. This shows the floodplain and wetlands. These wetlands are based on mapping, nationwide inventory maps and other state planning maps. Mr. Ed Lanay of our office has completed a wetland delineation that is in the process of being submitted to Army Corps of Engineers for their review and concurrence, and slightly differs from this map, which is not unusual given it's generally done through mapping versus actually field verification of wetlands. The next map on the screen is the source water protection areas map. The area in this solid red color, close enough for me, is in the excellent recharge area. And you will notice that a portion of the subdivision is within that recharge area, as well as a portion of the commercial area. I will address a portion of those when I get into the later part of my presentation regarding Chapter 89 compliance for those two areas. The next map is a soil survey for the NCRS. The soils on site are suitable for development for all four applications. The last map is a map that shows agricultural preservation. The area in blue is an ag easement, and the small portion down here is in an ag district land. As I mentioned, Mr. Linnae completed a wetlands delineation plan. Those wetlands are shown in green on the screen in front of you. In addition, due to the environmental features, our office was required to complete a drainage assessment report. That report can be found in your booklet. And as part of that, a resource buffer management plan was also required to be prepared. And this is an excerpt from a preliminary plan that is referenced in those plans that then describes the resource buffers and other protections we have made to the project. And that report can be found in Exhibit U of your booklet. Conservation A is located in this portion of the project. That is an area of non-regulated wetlands, meaning it is not subject to jurisdiction of the Corps of Engineers, shown in green. The area in orange is a proposed 35-foot wide buffer after afforestation, as we plan on afforesting that area. And the area in yellow is additional land that would be afforesting and protected as part of the conservation easement for the plan. Conservation Area B is in this location here. Again, the wetlands is shown in green. There's a 30-foot wide existing forested buffer that will be retained in full, and other areas that will remain is shown in the yellow in the conservation area. The last area to describe is Conservation Area E. It consists, again, of regulated wetlands shown in green. Not impacted by the road crossing. As you can see, we have a small road crossing here. There's currently an ag crossing. We'll be improving it slightly as part of this project. It shows the 30-foot wide resource buffer. And in this location right in here, generally, we have expanded that to 45-foot wide as mitigation for the impact of the wetlands and the resource buffer that would not exist in that area. And then again, the area in yellow is areas that will be part of the conservation area for this project. As Mr. Whitehouse mentioned, there was a couple waivers requested. This is where our first waiver comes into place. And that waiver is regarding to signage for resource protection and buffers. The code currently requires 100-foot spacing. You can imagine we have quite a lot of things that we have to place signs on. We're requesting that increment be allowed to be 200 feet versus the code required 100 feet. So it will still be signed, just not with signs, sign after sign after sign after sign. Continuing on into some other things, as Mr. Hutt mentioned, developer had hired a firm called Watershed Eco to complete a forest and delineation. Currently, as you all are aware, the code does not have a requirement for forest delineations. So we use the standard for Newcastle County's Unified Development Code. That seems to be the appropriate measure that's been used here before and was generally acceptable. And that delineation can be found in Exhibit T. The study found there is no Tier 1 forest cover on the property. For those that aren't aware, in Newcastle County, per the UDC, if you had Tier 1 forest, you cannot disturb that at all. So there is no Tier 1 forest within this property. There is approximately 16.24 acres of Tier 2 forest cover that was found in the northwestern, kind of this forest stand area here. And then there's some forest around existing buildings that actually got classified as forest given the amount of trees, but it was really woodlands surrounding some existing buildings. And the rest of the remaining forest, there's some forest down in this area, and then there's some forest down in this area, is all classified as Tier 3 forest. Furthermore, the report found there were no specimen trees on the property. And those that aren't aware, specimen trees are trees that are specific with a certain caliber diameter or a species. None of those were found on this property on site. Phase 1 archaeological assessment was completed by Dr. Ed Otter, and that report is found in Exhibit Q. We are currently coordinating with Dr. Otter on the additional field work as part of the project. In recognition of the vast amount of open space created by this project, the developer hired Foresight Associates to review this preliminary plan, and their letter could be found in Exhibit R. And the design intent is to create ecological corridors with natural landscaping to minimize the need for grass cutting and providing ecosystems and vibrant recreational areas throughout the site. As for the site itself, we'll start with the cluster subdivision and we'll begin with the perimeter buffer. The perimeter buffer in this case is this outer edge through here around this side, including BJ Lane, which cuts through here, which is not part of our property. That's actually parcel owned by Mr. Jackson, just so everyone's clearly aware that is actual a parcel through there. Buffer here, and then the perimeter buffer goes around this side all the way to the back. That is what we mean by the perimeter buffer. We provide a varying width buffer along that outer boundary with all lots out located outside the 30-foot forested buffer where appropriate, and or the 50-foot agricultural buffer. As we mentioned, we have agricultural lands that require a 50-foot buffer per the code. All lots except those along BJ Lane and those east of the stables are located at least 50 feet from the outer boundary, including areas that are both wooded and non-wooded. So in other words, if you have a wooded parcel, we have the 30-foot forested buffer and another 20-foot space before lot line begins. So in essence, the lots are at least 50 feet off the outer perimeter lines. The reason there's not a 30-foot landscape buffer along BJ Lane is the code only requires a 30-foot buffer where lots abut an agriculture area and where there are dwellings located within 50 feet of existing residential development. BJ Lane does not qualify for that. So therefore, we have a 20-foot buffer from BJ Lane within that section of the roadway. And for those curious of the math, as the proposed buffer, as defined with the number of trees, will add over 2,400 trees just in the buffer area alone. As for woodlands, the property contains approximately 28.1 acres of woodlands. As that describes the four areas, conglomerate here, one generally in the middle about that location, this area in here, and then on the southwest of the project. We are preserving approximately 23 acres of those woodlands. And the areas that are being removed, as you can see, is the one here in the middle where the existing outbuildings are located, and a small portion in here where we kind of get pinched between the stable property and then the reserve Lewis Landing. That's where the forest we removed. Everything else we have pretty much preserved to the maximum extent practical in those areas in kind. As you can see on the map, all lots abut open space throughout the community, as there are no lots in this community that are back-to-back. So every lot will have some semblance of open space for them to enjoy from their backyards. All streets, except for Mulberry Knoll Road Extended, and if I haven't stated this on the record yet, I will state it now. Mulberry Knoll Road Extended will be built, designed, constructed, and accepted by DLDOT and will be a state-maintained roadway. I'm sure you figured it out, but just wanted to make sure I was emphatically clear from that standpoint. All other roadways in the community will be designed for public use, but privately maintained and designed and approved in accordance with Chapter 99 of the Sussex County Code. The East-West Spine Road, in this general direction here, about to this location there, which is about two-thirds of the length, will not have any lots directly accessing that spine road, so that will act like a boulevard. That portion of the corridor will consist of 28-foot-wide paved roadways, an 8-foot-wide shared-use path, street-lined trees, and a drainage channel with naturalized planting to provide stormwater management as it bisects the property, as stormwater will travel in a north-to-south direction from Route 9 to Beaver Dam Road. For the rest of that roadway, it'll be 24 foot wide with a shared use path on one side of the road and a sidewalk on the other side. So you have a shared use path linkage from Mulberry Knoll Road Extended all the way down to Beaver Dam Road. All other roads within the community will be 24 foot wide and will have 5-foot sidewalks on both sides of the road. The proposed open space for this subdivision is approximately 166.5 acres of land, or approximately 44% of the project area. All active open space, active open space amenities for the subdivision will include two clubhouses. One will have a minimum size of 3,000 square feet, and the other a minimum size of 5,000 square feet. Two pools. One will have a minimum water surface area of 1,800 square feet, and the other a minimum surface area of 2,250 square feet. There'll be a splash pad or kiddie pool, three sports courts, four playgrounds, and four open play areas. The clubhouses are generally in the location of the red asterisks, for lack of a better description. Play areas and the like sports courts are in these other areas kind of designated in the orange circle, for lack of better description. So as you can tell, they're spaced throughout the community for all to use. The locations of the active amenities will be shown on the final subdivision plans, and those amenities will be separately approved through the site plan process. There are several pedestrian connections throughout the community. You can see one in this location here, another location in here, another location here that links all the way up to that central open space, another connection here. There are other trails throughout the community so that we can provide trail connections throughout the community that provides a trail system connectivity through the various open spaces so that we can link all the open spaces together so we can create a pedestrian-friendly neighborhood for all to enjoy. And it also links the shared use paths from Route 9 all the way down to Beaver Dam Road. Next, I'll go into the affordable community application. The site plan consists of four buildings for a total of 94 affordable housing units. Three buildings each have 24 units. One building has 22 units. And that is located on about 12.69 acres of land. The amenities for that project will include a playground, an unorganized play area, bike lockers, maintenance shed, and a backup generator. Building number four is the 22-unit building. That is actually designed as a resiliency center, and also where they have areas for kids to join after-school programs. 4-H clubs are very popular within there. What that resiliency center is, it is provided backup power. So should a power loss, it has backup generation so that residents will have access to heat or air, kitchen equipment, plus the ability to charge cell phones, et cetera, so they're able to subside and communicate during a power outage. The site will be constructed in two phases, with two buildings constructed in each phase. So phase one will be these two buildings, and phase two will be these two buildings. Accordingly, in discussing phasing, the residential cluster subdivision will be approved and constructed in phases. On the screen is a first iteration of the plan. It will change as we get into conversation with DLDOT about improvements, sewer, water, and the like, but this is just the first iteration to share what's going on. Phase one, phase two, phase three, phase four, phase four, phase five, phase six, seven, and eight. The reason why Mulberry Knoll Road is a separate project, you can imagine we have quite a bit of work to work out with DLDOT through that approval process. So hence why the phase is going to change, the timing, et cetera, will all be discussed during the plan approval process, annotated in a record plan, phasing notes, and whatever other documents required, including the recoupment agreement as far as what's going to be constructed in kind versus cash contribution.
Mr. Lardner, on that, before you go further, just with me, so is the Mulberry Knoll Road, is that the lighter blue of the two, so making that phase three? Okay, all right. On this, too, you know, phasing, there's two parts to that. One's an order of the phases, the other is the build out. I mean, I know there's all kinds of variables that go into build out, you know, economics, working through DLDOT, you know, you name it. But have you all done sort of a pro forma estimation on how long the build out of this project? In other words, you know, we talk about DLDOT roads being construction and the timing of that, but at the same time, no development gets built all right on day one either. So is there any sort of, you know, just guesstimation on the build out of this project time wise?
There's been some guesstimates right now, but to make it through the entitlement process, we're looking 2 years before we even thinking about having final plan approval. So What does that performer look like in 2 years is anybody's guess. So to sit here today to say the performer is this, I mean, they've done a performer based on today. But as you well know, it gets updated through time, gets updated as loans get reprocessed and everything else. So I don't have a true answer for that today. Who knows what the economy is going to be in 2 years? Who knows what anything is going to be, to go back to your point about everything else? That's about the best answer.
Years, 5 years, decade? It's
going to be years. You know, is it 5 years? Could be 10 years, could be 10 years, could be 20 years, could be 20 years. And obviously, you know, the desire not to be out any longer you need to, just because of loans and land value and everything else. So.
And the economy and everything else.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
So I have a question to that point with the phasing. So you're saying the Mulberry Road extension would be part of phase three?
We classified it phase three as its own phase because it has its own intricacies as far as DOT design and approval, DOT inspections. It'll be different than the roadway. So in theory, what could happen is, while we're designing, and we're going to leave the phase the way they are for right now when we discuss the semantics of them later on, while we're designing phase one, we would have already met with DOT numerous times, because it's going to take a lot of conversations to get through this. I believe Todd and Pam probably nodding north and south behind me. Ideally, we'd be designing phase one and whatever the improvements required for the entrance while we're designing this roadway, because it's going to take a long time to get that design approved through the various processes and constructed. So you may have simultaneous design, simultaneous construction going on. And these are all the things we need to work out with DOT, because one of the first things you got to figure out is the alignment, the cross section. They're updating their numbers, everything else. So these are all things that we know is going to happen. We just don't know all those definitive answers at this time.
Okay. I'd rather, obviously, the priority be the Mulberry Lane.
Right. And again, the developer wants to build this.
DOT won't let them, if they're too close to proximity, to be simultaneously going on either.
And obviously, we can't build the other projects without Mulberry Nova extended, so it's important to us as well. It's important to DOT. It's important to everybody. And this comes into making all these paths work and everything else. So it's a very dynamic project. But again, as you can tell, the developer's committed to it. This allows some cash flow to happen to kind of help offset some of the costs as well. As you imagine, the amount of upfront costs to build Mulberry Nova Road is not a very cheap proposition. So, you know, having some cash flow helps offset some of that cost as well.
To the point of the phasing, I read in the part of the paperwork that phase one of the affordable housing would be done initially. But so is there like a timeline for phase two to be done, or are you going to put it all in there back to back?
We're going to get the project approved as one project and then developer construct in phases. I'm not going to steal Mr. Holden's thunder. He can describe that process of why it's going to be done in phases, and he'll be able to describe that. If we didn't answer your question, Ms. Wingate, we can come back up and answer that question, but he'll be able to better explain that why it's phased the way it is than I could. I would not do it much service. The project has been designed to be pedestrian and bicycle friendly and connected with off-site buses and multimodal paths. On the screen is a map, again, we excerpted from DART, where this shows DART Route 206 in this east-west direction of Route 9, where it has linkages to Georgetown and Lewis to grab all the bus routes, which then can go further through to the state. Within the frontage of North Star, on our side of the road, there are two existing bus stops that exist along this route. There is one immediately east of it. And then if you were to safely cross the road at the signal of Route 9, there are three other bus stops there as well. So there's actually six bus stops either right along our frontage or within a couple hundred feet of our frontage. And this is very important to the affordable housing component of things, as a lot of the residents there need access to public transportation. And it's one of the primary reasons, one of many reasons why it is located in this portion of the project. As we started talking about connectivity, this map starts to fill in a lot of blanks. First, there are approximately 1.8 miles of existing shared use path adjacent to the proposed project along DOT maintained roadways shown in blue. So this was built by Reserve at Lewis Landing, built by Vineyards, built by Lewis Crossing, built by Lewis Crossing, built by Coastal Village, so they're all in place existing as of today. The developer, as part of their improvements, when it's all said and done, will be installing approximately 3.3 miles of shared use path. That is all the shared use paths shown in green, along Route 9, both sides of Mulberry on North Road, both sides of Beaver Dam Road, in this location, north side of Beaver Dam, this location, north side of Beaver Dam location. In addition to that, developer will be installing 1.3 miles shared use path along the east-west corridor as shown in red. That is a shared use path I explained that comes through here, things along down through here, provides the linkages, so you have a shared use path linking Mulberry Knoll Road east-west back down to Beaver Dam Road. In addition, there's another 0.8 miles of trail path shown in orange. So now the orange starts to show all the linkages and trail connectivity. So you start to see everything starting to link up, getting into the central open spaces and the like. And finally, I should have probably picked a bolder color, but we didn't. It's 14 miles of sidewalk shown in white. So you can see that this facility is very walkable, pedestrian friendly, bicycle friendly. And if that wasn't enough to kind of go wow, at the end of the day, residents of this community can take walks from a 1 mile loop to a 5 mile loop or any other route not depicted shown on this screen. Just a few more minutes to kind of illustrate some pictures, the design intent. As Mr. Hutt mentioned, we have talked to many different experts of what we're trying to achieve. The first picture in the top left is be some additional wetland restoration. Again, it's isolated wetlands, provide some additional things to help restore that wetland. Active play areas for varying age of kids. Why I love the unorganized play areas, because it could be a wiffle ball field one day, a lacrosse field another day, and whatever it is. So that way, as the children grow in age, and as I grow in age, change my sports, well, I just want open space to play. Picture number three kind of gives you a viewing pavilion. There'll be a couple of those spread throughout the community, so someone to kind of go relax and view and enjoy nature if you're into the passive areas. A contemplation feature, an art feature, again, to be included somewhere throughout the community to provide some additional activities. The coastal plain meadow. Meadows are kind of hard to picturesque, so I'm not going to say it's going to look like this, but the intent is to provide natural plantings throughout the community. Can you imagine trying to maintain 166 acres in a very cultured way? It would be a lot of cost-consuming time, so they're looking to put various things in meadow condition to kind of help lower the maintenance of it, allow insects and ecology to grow and work together, especially in this corridor as we start to try to link all these different wetlands together. And then finally, a forest path, nature path through forest, whether it's existing woods, minimize tree disturbance, you can weave it through there. And again, where we end up planting additional areas, provide the natural path, again, provide additional linkages and areas for residents to enjoy. Next, I'm going to give you an idea of kind of what a rendering would look like in this intersection here. So this is Mulberry Knoll Road Extended. This is the east-west spine road. So basically, you will start out, you have monument signs on both sides, your subdivision monument signs. You have your crosswalks. Water features will be on both sides of the community. As you can see, there'll be street trees and like. This will, again, be planted in some low-maintenance type of grasses, shrubberies, everything else to provide a nice look and feel to the community. And this, and the boulevard down the middle with some street trees, curbed island, all three access points will be the same. So this is the Mulberry Node access point, the one on Route 9 will look the same, and same with the one off of Beaver Dam Road. Then another quick rendering view is generally in this area. From here, it'll be kind of looking in a northwest cardinal direction from there. So Route 9, east and west, kind of give you a look. There's the vineyards in the background. The boulevard intersection here, you come down the intersection. This is the main clubhouse. So the larger numbers I gave you, the clubhouse size, the surface area, the pool, the kiddie pool, all that will be in this area. You can see the sports courts, the unorganized play areas. You can see the ponds, the other pond in here. You can see a waterway that'll be coming through here, and you'll hit intermittent wet ponds. Again, that's how we provide stormwater, a nice natural feel. So as people walk through this, you get a nice little welcoming community. This picture does a really good job of showing the open space that's being provided, how it gets connected together with trails that's interspersed by the community for residents and visitors to enjoy. So again, this is that vision that they've been working on since its inception. and we're bringing it, that to life. So before I turn this back over to Mr. Hutt, I need to review a few more code compliance items for the project. The second waiver we had asked for was regarding a grading plan. During the creation of Ordinance 2489, or better known as the Grading and Drainage Ordinance, that Mr. Robinson was part of crafting and was reviewed by this body, the ordinance did not address the need for a grading plan during preliminary plan review. It is one of the code requirements, nor did it describe the type of grading plan that's required. And those that have done development, those who have seen development, creating grading plans are preliminary, is very preliminary. We pretty much take it, we throw it in the trash, for lack of better words, because we don't have the appropriate information to do the grading plan at that point. We don't have stormwater management numbers. We don't have storm pipes designed. We don't have sewer pipes designed. So what we've requested is to submit bulk grading plans during the construction document approval process that will be reviewed and approved as part of the county engineering review, as we think that's the more appropriate time. But given the lay of the land, the natural drainage features, we will be able to follow those natural contours. There'll be some recontouring, but not a significant amount of earth moving to achieve the grading to meet all the various requirements of Sussex County, DENREC, Seven Stormwater Regulations, DELDOT, because they will be reviewing part of the drain with Mulberry Knoll Road Extended and Route 9 Beaver Dam Road. As mentioned, the project reviewed by PLUS in December of 2021. We did make a change to the plan. As Mr. Hutt mentioned, we identified this piece here as not part of the application, submitted that to PLUS. PLUS concurred, and a new review was not required, so we were able to use the original PLUS review as far as project. Our response can be found in Exhibit M. Our office prepared environmental assessment public facility report for all four applications. They can be found in Exhibit K. The preliminary subdivision plan was reviewed by the Technical Advisory Committee. There was no substantial comments required to change. We just noted some of their comments. That response can be found in Appendix N of the subdivision booklet. As I mentioned, a portion of the major subdivision, like I said, generally in about this area, is located in an excellent recharge area. Based on some preliminary calculations and conservative calculations, we found that the impervious area may be around 38%. Which is just a tick over the requirement where nothing is required to be done per Chapter 89. So the impervious area will be verified during the design of the appropriate phase, and the information required to demonstrate compliance with Chapter 89 will be submitted to the Engineering Department for their review and concurrence as part of that plan approval. Same goes with the portion of the commercial, generally in this area here. As you all are aware, site plan is not required as part of rezoning application. So should the applications be approved and a site plan form is submitted, we will then at that time demonstrate compliance with Chapter 89. And those letters can be found in Exhibit L of both booklets. Subdivision complies with Chapter 99C of the Sussex County Code. That full written response can be found in Exhibit J. More specifically, the project is an infill subdivision with a density similar to the surrounding properties. The subdivision includes over 166 acres of open space. Approximately 81% of the wooded area will be preserved. Our perimeter buffer, excluding road frontages, will consist of a minimum planted or existing woodland width of 30 feet. Water will be provided by Tidewater. Sewer will be provided by Sussex County. The subdivision will meet sediment and stormwater regulations. Sidewalks and our shared use paths will be located throughout the community. And the project is located within the Henlopen Transportation Improvement District. Finally, the project has been designed in accordance with superior design requirements as follows. First, we identified the wetlands on the property as delineated by our office. Next, we identified the woodland areas within the site and as confirmed by Watershed Eco. Next, we identified critical roadways, with the first being Mulberry Knoll Road Extended, as contemplated by DELDOT through their study and their preferred alternatives. Next, we identified an east-west roadway linking Mulberry Knoll Road to Beaver Dam Road and Route 9, with access points that would be preferred by DELDOT as they align with existing entrances on the opposite side of the road to create four-way intersections. With that, We were finally able to draw the lots while minimizing impacts to wetlands and woodlands. In a cluster subdivision, we are required to provide 30% open space, for which this application, based on the 379 acres plus or minus, would require 113.71 acres of land. We are providing 166.5 acres of land, or 44%. In addition, there are additional requirements that at least 30% be adjacent to either an existing or officially planned public park, land preserved by easement, or land preserved as open space in a municipal, county, state, or federal ownership, or existing wetlands, waterways, wildlife corridors, or other ecologically sensitive land, or existing farmland and or woodlands. The code further says that if more than one of these physical features exists on adjacent properties, then one of these features will be identified and used to satisfy the requirement to demonstrate 30 of 30. As you can tell, this project is unique as it not only has multiple types of land that can be used for this calculation, it is spread throughout the community. It is not isolated in one area or the other. Furthermore, we attempt to provide protection for all those various areas that you've seen through my presentation. For this project, we chose the western portion of the project as this area contains wetlands, woodlands, and lands of conservation easement. There it goes, okay. The area in pink, is contiguous and provides wildlife corridors linking the wooded area at the reserves at Lewis Landing, isolated wetlands, then the wooded area and the agriculture easement to additional wetlands and active open space. In addition, the code allows a connection via one road crossing and thus connected to the piece shown in orange. The acreage of the first area is 46.30 acres, which is 40% of the required 113.71 acres of open space and 27.80% of the proposed 166.5 acres of open space. When including the second area, the connected open space is 63.60 acres, which is 55.93% of the required open space and 38.20% of the proposed open space. Finally, one concern that has been raised is the setbacks and buffering between Lewis Crossing and the Willows and North Star. The affordable home community provides a 30-foot wide forested buffer, and when combined with the existing 30-foot buffer in Lewis Crossing, results in a 60-foot wide forested buffer, which was always the vision of the commission when the buffer ordinance was created. In addition, the building height for Willows at North Star will be less than 42 feet. If this was submitted under the Sussex County Rental Program, a setback of 50 feet is required. The building close to Lewis Crossing, which is here, will be a minimum of 100 feet from the shared property line with Lewis Crossing.
Thank you, Mr. Lardner.